Hey, this is Larry Goins. How's everybody doing?
Good.
Great.
Excellent, excellent. We got a good crowd on tonight, and we actually got to skip a couple of weeks because of 5 Mondays in the month. So we're back on track here. I hope everybody's doing well. So I'll just say whoever wants to, go ahead and jump right in and throw a question out.
Okay, I'll go first. It's Mark Siegel from Rhode Island. How you doing, Larry?
What's going on, Mark? How you been, buddy?
Things are good, man. Too much vacation, believe it or not. I'm taking more vacation than I want to take at this point because everybody's been planning vacations around me. So it's forcing me
good
not
problem to.
To
have.
Yeah, I guess so. So my first question, I have several, but my first question is I own a 9-unit apartment building. I bought it 3 years ago. It was, you know, maybe 60% occupied. It wasn't running that well. I took it over. It's running 100% occupancy for the last year or two, and rents are up, and it's running pretty smoothly, but it still takes up some time. And I've heard you talk about, you know, residential real estate and in a way that it might not be the best vehicle. Do you think I'm better off selling that and taking it and doing, like, the Filthy Riches program? Or and the second part of this question is I listened to the Mobile Park webinar, and that was very, very appealing to me. So, you know, what do you think about those two things?
Okay, first of all, let me what you're doing is asking me to choose between what you have now and what you could be doing. So
yep.
having said that, I'm a firm believer in equity doesn't mean anything until you can convert it to either cash or cash flow. So tell me about your 9-unit. What's it worth, and what's it bringing in, and how much do you owe on it?
So it's bringing in about $1,000 to $2,000 a month on average throughout the entire year.
Well, that's a big range, $1,000 to $2,000 a month.
Yeah, because the range is that way because I pay for oil heat, and we're in the Northeast. So really, there were some months in the wintertime that I was like, you know, made $100, but then like last month it was you know, like a $4,500 a month. So
when you
just
say made $1,000 to $2,000 a month, you mean your net after expenses?
Yes, that's the net after taxes, expenses, and everything else. I'm banking $1,000 to $2,000 a month.
Okay, so what's the gross rent, and then what is your expenses?
Gross rent's about I have about up to about $7,800 a month, and expenses. Yep, and expenses are running about in the wintertime, my oil bills can run up to like $2,000 to $2,500 in, you know, really cold, crappy months. You know, my oil bills can run really high. But other than that, I just have a mortgage and then other little, you know, little like taxes and stuff like that. So average expenses throughout the year might be $4,000 a month.
So what's it worth and what do you owe on it?
It's worth, good question. I bought it for $420. So what's it worth is, you know, that's questionable because what it's worth is what somebody will pay for it. And if you're going to go by that math, then, you know, I don't know if you go at a cap rate or something like that, but I imagine it's worth about what I bought it for.
$450, you said?
I bought it for $420, and I bet I bet it's worth about $420 still, too. Maybe a little.
And what do you owe on it?
It's running better. $320.
You owe $320. So you have $100,000 in equity.
Yep.
And you're bringing in anywhere from $12,000 to $24,000 a year.
That's about right. Yep.
Okay. So basically, if your net is $12,000 to $24,000, and you
yep.
have $100,000 in equity, you're getting a 12% to 24% return on your money.
Right.
So plus now, if you own it, you're getting depreciation. You're getting appreciation, if any, which is probably not much.
Right.
But you're also getting equity buildup, whereas
right.
every year at the end of the year, like you owe $320 now, next year you'll probably owe $310.
Right, right.
If that makes
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, and I'm depreciating it too, so I can write off some of that, you know, money that I make elsewhere. So those, I understand all that. But is this? Do you think this is the best vehicle, or am I better off, you know, doing like the Filthy Riches program, where I buy a house for $10,000 and sell to somebody for $40,000 and then, you know, I'm using my own capital or something along those lines? Am I better off divesting out of the residential? Because it still works, Larry. I mean, I'm doing it all myself. I don't have a property manager. I did for a while. He wasn't doing a good enough job. I took it over. It's much better now. And you know, but it's still, you know, I got to answer calls and, you know, there's water heaters going and at midnight on Friday night and good luck getting somebody in there and, you know, the headaches that you have.
Absolutely do, and that's another thing that you need to weigh into the equation. Also, if you sold the property right now for $420 and you owe $320 on it, you're going to have closing costs. If it's worth $420, would you really be able to sell it for $320, or would you have to take maybe $400? And or if even if you got $420, if you have to have a realtor sell it for you, that's going to be 6%, which is $24,000. So now
right.
you have $76,000 left.
I think I would sell it myself, Larry, to be honest. I mean, I know it. I've bought and sold enough businesses in this, at this point. My last business I sold myself, no broker fee. So I think I would try to sell it myself.
Okay, good. That would work out good. That would work out good. If I were in your situation, based on what you've told me so far, mm-hmm. I would do, and I don't know how much extra money you have, but I would do maybe one Filthy Riches deal and see how that goes, and see, and then say, look, oh wow, okay, this went pretty well. If I could do this, and I, where do you live, by the way?
Rhode Island, but I'm trying to work in Missouri, in St. Louis. That's where, you know, last like 2-3 months, all my research and due diligence has been in St. Louis.
Right, and that's not a bad market to do Filthy Riches deals in. That's not. I know I have several people that are doing it there. So. If I would try one and see how it goes and how you liked it and then think, oh, wow, okay, now I'm bringing in X and I invested X, so if I sold that apartment building, the 9 units, then I could buy X number of these and have X coming in and would you be better off? So that's what I would do.
Okay.
That way,
all right.
you're not doing anything until you kind of test the waters.
Right, that makes sense. And how do you feel about the mobile?
Have you done any in Missouri yet, in St. Louis?
I've done nothing. I'm working with Randolph, and I had my first call with him a couple weeks ago, and he gave me a little bit of homework to do. I really have done no wholesale deals yet, nothing. I've done nothing so far. I've been
oh, okay. Well, Randolph is the man. He can really help you. He's been with me a long time. He's a good friend of mine. I know the market. I mean, I know him very, very well. He knows the market, and he has a lot of successful students in his own right, and he closed 32 deals with us last year, plus deals that he did on his own.
Wow.
So he's the man. He really is, and he's good. So but I hope that helped you. I hope that helped you kind of try to figure out what you, you know, what you want to do.
Right. Right, I got you. And you, did you listen to the mobile park calls? Well, I didn't hear you on there. I don't think I heard you on there.
I was there at the beginning, and I had to. My mom's in the hospital, so I had to take off. So he wrapped it up and finished. So,
I'm sorry to hear that.
But it was a live call, so you know. But I did have to leave. But
yep.
Anyway, he's a good guy, and that guy knows what he's doing.
Right. Do you like mobile parks? Do you think that's a good vehicle?
I like mobile home parks. I have owned one mobile home park, and I've had a lot of students that ask me about it, so I got the best guy in the business on to teach it. But I do buy mobile homes. I like mobile homes. And if they're in a park, and if you have parks near where you are and you can do it, that's awesome. That's great. But I do like mobile homes.
Okay. All right, I have more questions, but I'm going to pass it off to anybody else, see if anybody else has questions, and I'll come back to you.
Okay, sure. So anybody else have a question you want to jump in? Anybody, jump in there.
Yeah, this is Rev Holmes. I have a question I'm embarrassed to ask, but I have not been able to get myself to move in on the real estate things that you teach, but every time I do anything that you teach, I think, good. Now I have a friend who followed what I said and scared herself with the money she made. Now we don't know, and I don't know, and I said, call Larry's office, rather to do hard money, you know, do a hard money lending for real estate, or just go ahead and do one of your programs and just do the real estate, because she knows if she lets the money sit in the bank, it depreciates and she'll spend it.
Right.
And she has one house a family wants her to buy, but she'll still have $300,000 left that she needs to do something with, and also what best for the taxes, because that wasn't her tax bracket.
Right.
6 months ago.
Now, who is this to you? Is this a partner or a business partner or something?
She goes to my church.
Oh, okay. So you're trying to figure out what to do to help her spend the money and help you at the same time. Invest.
Well, I don't know how it helps me, but in as much as she does what I say, it's important to me that I do the right thing.
Well, you know, she's got $300,000 in the bank. She could do several things. She could be a hard money lender. You could go out and find real estate deals, and she could put up the money, and you guys could split the profit. She could be your private money lender, where you simply pay her a percentage of the profit, or you pay her a flat interest rate. For example, she puts up the money to purchase the property and the rehab, and you give her a 10% return annual, and then just prorate it. Or have her, or just pay her interest based on the time that you use the money. So there's many, many different things you can do. But if she's wanting to diversify, she could do several things. She could be a hard money lender. She could buy some rental properties. She could do seller financing. And she could be a private money lender for you as well. So there's a lot of different things that she could do. But I think the most important thing is, what does she want to do? What does she feel comfortable with? And what does she know the most about? Like being a hard money lender, there's a lot to that. You gotta have rehab inspections. You gotta oversee the work or send somebody out to inspect the work before you do draws and all that. If you're doing a hard money rehab loan, if you're doing seller financing, you need to know a little bit about what you're doing there. And you know, if you know real estate, you know, you might be able to just use her as a private money lender, and you go out and put the deals together, and then you guys either split the profit or you pay her an interest rate for using the money. Does that make sense?
It does to me, but she's a scaredy cat, and she made all this money doing something that I said to do that she was scared to do, and so when it turned out even better than I thought. I just told her, put herself in your hands, because anything I've done that you've said blew up really well.
Well, that's great. That's great. So, I think what she needs to do is she needs to get some edumacation. She needs to learn, you know, a little bit more. So, you know, people think real estate is risky. Being uneducated is what's risky. Taking the risk out is getting yourself educated. So whatever she wants to do, she should start doing some research and learn as much as she can, not only from me but from other people as well, because I don't know everything. But what I tell people to do is don't be a follower, be a student. Learn a little bit from this person, a little bit from that person, a little bit from the other person, and then come to your own conclusion as to what you want to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Awesome. Good.
Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. I hope that helped.
Yes.
Anybody else have a question you want to throw out there?
Hi, Larry. It's Sonia in Dallas. How are you?
What's going on, Sonia? How are you?
I'm doing just fine. I really don't have a question, but I came out to the asset protection seminar a couple weeks ago.
Right.
Yeah, and started not to come. I actually just came, number one, to kind of get away for a minute, and I was kind of in the middle of thinking about those things. It was absolutely excellent. Absolutely
Right.
excellent. I did not imagine that it would be as appropriate for me and the things that I deal with as it was. And the guys were, of course, very, very knowledgeable, but they were very personable, too. You know, in between sessions and even afterward, they had no hesitation to chat on the side and talk about very specific things with different people. So if anybody has not gone to that, I highly recommend it if the opportunity presents itself again.
That is great. I really appreciate your feedback on that. And I did hear very similar stories from everybody that I heard feedback from that was there. I heard very similar stories. How many people ended up attending? Do you know?
Oh boy, it was. Oh, I'm not good. I'm at least 50. I'm guessing. I don't know.
Okay. Well, good.
But there were a good bit of people.
That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, they were from all over the place too.
Yeah, that's a benefit of being in the inner circle. I started working with these guys, and they're very, very knowledgeable, and I really
mm-hmm.
liked what they were doing, so I have them come into my events, and they actually created this event just for my inner circle students, where they come
mm-hmm.
in and they teach asset protection, entity structuring, and tax strategies for a few days. So
yeah.
I'm saying that for the benefit of other people on the call. If you haven't been, you know, we try to have them a couple of times a year around different parts of the country. So, you know, I urge you to get to one of them if you can. It's an event that they normally charge $5,000 for, but, you know, I've worked out a deal with them where my inner circle students can come for free. So we set up that special event for my students. So.
Because, Larry,
I'm glad
you know,
you
the problem that I had been having over the past, say, 2 years in trying to figure out is I know that I need to totally redo my entities and strategize, you know, a little differently. Because what I had been doing was everything in one LLC, and, you know, of course, you know that's not the way to go.
Right.
But I had the problem, too, with tax strategies. And I talked to my CPA. And the CPA thinks taxes, but he's not thinking asset protection. And the attorney isn't talking to me about taxes. And this group was able to deal with all of it at once. And I had never met anybody who could talk to me about the legal liabilities without excluding the tax liability.
Right.
So it was awesome.
Good.
Yeah.
Those guys really know what they're doing.
Yeah, they sure do. I bought their books, which were very reasonable.
That's great. That's great. Well, I'm glad. I've heard pretty much the same thing from everybody else that I talked to that attended. So I'm glad I got your feedback, too.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, good. Does anybody else have a question out there you want to throw out? Okay, Mark, jump back in with one of yours.
I was going to say, all right, I'm back in. Larry, what do you think our ultimate goal is? What are we shooting for? I mean, you got a lot of different vehicles. You got, you know, the wholesaling, you got the filthy riches. I've heard you talk about so much. You know, are we ultimately trying to become hard money lenders? It seems like that's either that or the filthy riches seems like it's the best way to create an ongoing cash flow without having the headaches of the everyday, you know, management of properties.
Well, you know, and that really is true. You want to get to the point where you're doing hard money lending or seller financing. And that once you get to that point, you can get out of the rat race if you want to. In the sense of you're buying and selling, you take that money and you either do seller finance deals, keep some as rentals, or become a hard money lender with some of it. So if you're buying and selling houses, you buy it for 50, you sell it for 60, you made 10 grand, you do 10 of those deals, then you can go out and do a $50,000 hard money loan. or buy 5 or 10 or several filthy riches deals and sell them with seller financing, if that makes
right.
sense.
Yep, and you have to structure those through a broker now, right? You can't, because you only can do three deals a year, is that right?
Well, actually, there's a lot of different things you can do, and it depends on who you're selling it to. And I actually wrote a 16-page report called How Dodd-Frank Affects Seller Financing and How to Comply.
Okay.
And if you go to LarryGoins.com and type in Dodd-Frank, it'll pop up.
Okay. Okay.
And it's just a free 16-page report that you can download. We'll even mail you a physical copy, and we'll pay the shipping if you want to do that.
Okay, I'll find it.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, I'm sure I can find it. You don't have to mail me a copy. I'm pretty much...
No, I'm just saying that if you opt in, you can elect to have us mail you a copy as opposed to just downloading it.
I got you.
So, yeah. But anyway, Yeah, there's a lot of different things you can do with Dodd-Frank, but the ultimate goal is to get to a point where you have enough assets to where you can be a lender, whether it be through seller financing, or you can be a landlord if you want to do that, or you can just do hard money loans. And if you're doing hard money loans and want to do hard money loans, there will come a time where you're wholesaling properties, but if you've got the money, you wholesale the property and you provide the financing for your wholesale buyer, for your rehabber. So say you buy the property for 50, you turn around and sell it for 60, it needs 10,000 in work. Well, you make them a $70,000 hard money loan. You give them 60 to pay you, which really, it only takes 50 to pay you. So now you're earning 15% and 5 points or whatever on your $10,000 profit right away. And you give them the $10,000 to rehab it, but you don't give them that money until the work is complete. So you've got a $70,000 loan that you only have $50,000 in, earning 15% on, so your yield is actually higher. And if the average hard money loan lasts 90 days, you could turn your money 4 times a year. If you're getting 15% and 5 points, that's 5 points times 4 times a year. That's 20% return right there. Plus the 15%, that's 35% return that you're earning on your money.
Right.
As long as you can turn it 4 times a year.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. I like those numbers.
There you go. That's good. That's cool. All right, cool. Anybody else have a question? Anybody? Jump right in. Oh, no questions. Mark, you got any more?
I got one more.
All right, go ahead, buddy.
I try to write them up ahead of time, so you know, I'll get stumped.
That's
last
good,
time.
Man. I appreciate that.
I only had four last time. I felt like I got, you know, I didn't get it all. So I have not done my first deal yet, Larry. Like I said, I'm working with Randolph. I'm excited. I'm working hard. I'm trying to get everything going. What do you think? What would you say? What should be spending most of my time doing at this point? Just continue to focus on the education and working with Randolph, and you know, ultimately I'll get that done by working along those lines.
Well, if you're working with Randolph, he's going to tell you what to go out and do as far as activities.
Yeah, he is.
So yeah, and he's really, really good at that because he knows what to do. So,
right, right.
But yeah, I mean, you always want to continue educating yourself, but don't get caught up in, should I do mobile homes? Should I do short sales? Should I do lease options? Should I do subject to? Should I be a hard money? Should I do this? Find something you like and that you know how to do, okay, and then go out and do a bunch of them and make some money and then start expanding if you want to. But you've got to focus. You've got to start focusing on something, and
right.
And don't get distracted by this webinar or that webinar, even if they're my webinars, you know, where I'm bringing in somebody. Don't get distracted by that. Yeah, it's all good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, if you're at that point and you're ready and you want to expand what you're doing, that's great. But you've got to start focusing on one specific thing. And quite frankly, most of the time people are starting out, they want to wholesale. Okay,
right.
That's the quickest thing. That's where you need the least amount of money. You turn them quick. You don't have to manage rehabs. You're just in and out, buying and selling, churn and burn.
Right.
So I think that's very, very important, just to learn to focus and get organized and then just take action and do it. And I tell people the three most important things in real estate are make offers, make offers, make offers. So, in my opinion, that actually is the three most important things in real estate right there.
Okay.
So that's what I would focus on, making offers.
So, Larry, just to follow up on that, because that was Max's question, should I really be working on getting a VA by now? Should I have a VA out there making, you know, in the St. Louis market, you know, find a real estate agent that's going to let me use a number and just having my VA make offers every single day?
You could, if you can find a real estate agent with an NAID number, you could have a VA do that for you. Absolutely.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with that at all. The key is finding that agent that will let you do that.
And do you have an approach on that, on how to find that? I mean, I'm part of a real estate investment group down there. And do I just pose the question to the group, or is that like kind of a no-no? Should I like kind of just ask for
agents? Well, no, as you personally are calling realtors about properties,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you find one that you kind of hit it off with, which you should do on about every other call.
Right.
Once you find one that you hit it off with, you're going to say, you know, I'm really looking for an agent that I can work with on a regular basis and send deals to on a consistent basis. Would that be something you would be interested in doing? And, you know, what do you think they're going to say? Of course. Well, you know, in fact, I was thinking that I wouldn't mind, because I would like to submit an offer on a lot of properties. And Lord knows the last thing in the world I want to do is waste your time, because I know nobody gets paid until the deal closes. So I was kind of thinking, if I find a real estate agent that I can work with on a regular basis, I would actually even hire and pay for an assistant to help them submit offers. And that way, you know, the agent wouldn't even have to be involved on a regular basis until we got a deal accepted. Would that be something you would be interested in me doing for you, maybe hiring you an assistant to help you submit offers for me in your name? Now, what do you think they're going to say?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what objections might they have? Because I did develop a relationship with an agent, and she's been submitting HUD deals for me, and I've probably submitted 20 or 30 deals with her at least. And then I got to say to her, well, what do you think about me, you know, having that VA come in and make offers? And she said, let me think about that. And I haven't heard from her since. But
here's what you got to say. Did you notice I never used the word VA? I said, hire you an assistant.
Right. Okay.
That's all I said. You're not going to tell them up front, yeah, I'm going to find me a virtual assistant from the Philippines for $2 an hour. You know, they don't want to hear that up front. But if you say, I'll hire somebody to help you to do all the legwork, and that way, you know, they can submit them in your name, you know, with you as my buyer's agent, and they're going to be all over that. So you got to, it's very important about the verbiage that you use.
Right. Gotcha. I follow you. And I agree with that. I think I need to adjust my terminology a little bit, and I will do so.
You got to think about this. Guys, everybody that's on this call, listen to this. When you are talking to somebody, I don't care who you're negotiating with or talking to and what you're trying to accomplish, but think about it from the other person's perspective. If I'm a real estate agent and I get a call out of the blue from somebody up in New Jersey and they want to buy properties in St. Louis, and they're talking about hiring a VA to you know, all I need is your NAID number and your password. Can you give that to me? No, they're not going to do that. You got to think about it from their perspective. They want to make sure that they know who they're dealing with, they like you, they trust you, they feel comfortable with you. So you want to talk about some of the other agents you might have worked with, or if you have, if you haven't, don't lie. But, you know, hey, I'm looking for a good agent that I can work with on a regular basis, and I'd like to submit some offers, and I'm looking for a good buyer's agent that I can work with. In fact, I wouldn't even mind hiring them a virtual assistant if I get the right person. So I shouldn't have said virtual assistant. I wouldn't even mind hiring them somebody to come in and put together the offers and submit the offers to the listing agents or to HUD, and just to help out, because, you know, Lord knows the last thing in the world I want to do is waste your time. So, and see, if you noticed how I even put it about, you know, I'm looking for an agent, you know, I can hire them an assistant, I don't want to waste their time. You know, it's like I'm telling them what I'm willing to do, but I'm not asking them to do it. And it's almost like you want them to come out and say, hey, yeah, I'll do that. You're going to go through it. You're going to hire me an assistant to do some legwork and I get the commission? Yeah, I'll do that. You see what I'm saying? To see the approach that I'm using?
Yep.
Good. Excellent. You got anything else, Mark?
I do. Nobody else wants to talk? It's just going to
be
me.
Well, let's see. Does anybody else have a question?
Sonia has a question.
Okay, good.
Larry, I'm not very good at wholesaling, and that, you know, I do everything, and I've wholesaled properties, but that systematic wholesale back-to-back-to-back 2, 3, 4 a month thing, for some reason, I'm just not there.
Right.
And one of the blocks that I have is just the choreography of it. Like, for example, one problem that that I had was, how do you show an occupied rental, you know, or an occupied home of any kind? You know, how do you get 5, 6 investors out to look at a wholesale house like that? I don't understand how to get away with that.
Well, first of all, who are you buying houses from that are occupied?
I had a house that was owned by a man, an individual, free and clear. It was a rental for him. He wanted to get rid of it, but it was occupied.
Okay.
And,
so it's a tenant-occupied property. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My problems have been tenant-occupied, but I just threw in occupied in general.
Okay. So with these occupied properties, did you look at them? Have you been inside them?
Yes.
Okay. Why don't you take a ton of pictures while you're
mm-hmm.
in there? And then that
mm-hmm.
way you can send all the pictures to your buyer.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually never had a problem with that. Any rental property that we were wholesaling, we've never had anybody want to go in a rental property. That we've had some that wanted pictures, but we've never had any that wanted to go inside.
What about those? Because the ones that I had needed repairs. Wouldn't investors want to see those repairs, those conditions for themselves?
Well, they would, but if you have enough pictures, they can look at the pictures and estimate what the repairs are going to be. That's what we do when we're doing our preliminary due diligence. We look at all the pictures that are on the website. Normally, you have anywhere from about 10 to 20 pictures on any
mm-hmm.
property that's on the MLS. So that's what mm-hmm. we do is we look at all the different pictures, and we're zooming in and looking at it. Does that look like a spot on the ceiling? Does that floor look level? What's up with those cabinets? It looks like a cabinet door is missing. So we're looking at all that stuff, and that's kind of the preliminary stuff. Yeah, eventually we're going to send somebody out to go inside just like you are. But if you're doing all your due diligence and you got pictures, you got rehab estimates, you know, you don't need to send all your buyers through it. If it does need repairs, like you just mentioned, just get one person to go over there and do a scope of work, a list of everything that needs to be done, and that should be sufficient for any investor buyer. No, that's okay. I was just going to say, and if you do get one that still wants to get in, you know, you're either going to have to get them in or find another answer. But, you know, usually if a property is tenant occupied, it can't be in too bad a shape because somebody's living in it.
Hmm. So the order would be, so I found this property, I'm looking at it, I make an offer, the owner accepts my offer. So by now, I guess I would have had all of the pictures taken. So I send the numbers out, purchase price, repairs, ARV, along with the picture to my buyer's list.
Right. Well, you'll probably put them on your website, but
mm-hmm.
you would have, as a wholesaler, now what we do as a wholesaler, we're going to have pictures, we're going to get a CMA, comparative market analysis, and we're going to have a scope of work. So we try to give everything. In fact, we do limited inspections now on the property. So any prospective buyer can see exactly what needs to be done and, you know, any kind of repair things like that would show up on an inspection. So there's no reason for them to even have to get into a property. So if you do that, there's no reason for your buyer to have to.
Hmm. Okay. And so they will go to closing never having been inside?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Most of the people we sell houses to never see them.
Okay. All right.
Sounds weird, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've got, you know what, it's a mental block there because I'm so hands-on that it's just a mental block.
You know, I bought a car about a year ago. And I was looking for this specific car. I was looking for an LX470 Lexus. I've had about four or five Lexus. But I knew what I wanted, and I didn't want a new one. I've never bought a new car in my life except for my mom. But I wanted a Lexus. So I got online, and I just searched the whole United States, and I found what I was looking for in Alabama. And I'm thinking, I can't buy a car without looking at it. But I said, wait a minute. I buy houses all the time without looking at them. Why can't I buy a car? So I had the dealer. I had the guy go around, and they had about 30-some pictures on their website. But I had the guy walk around. I said, look, that picture of the front, it looks like a little ding or something. What is that? He said, oh, no, that's something it just scraped off. It was something on there, some tar or something. I can't remember what he said. And I had him go around and look at every little thing that showed up in the picture. And I bought the car, and I had I believe it's called U-Ship. I had U-Ship. I paid them $500 to get it up here. I was actually in Chicago doing a boot camp, and my wife said, your car just came in today. And it's been a great car, and I still drive it. And that was about a year or so ago. So,
well, I'm sure you don't remember our conversation when I came out to the inner circle, but I'll remind you that my biggest problem is that I think I'm ready to call myself a control freak now. It's time to try to let that go a little bit, but I think that causes me problems with wholesaling too.
And maybe so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Well, you'll get over that. You'll get past it.
Well, I'm having to get past it now because I really need to expand more.
Uh-huh.
And you know, that holds me back a little bit, you know. So I'm slowly but surely I'm getting beyond it. Eventually I'll let it go, I guess.
You will. You'll
okay,
be able to do that.
You. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Anybody else have a question? Anybody else have a question about anything you're working on, anything you're doing, anything you need help with, any kind of roadblock, anything you want to throw out there? What? No more questions?
What are the best lists for wholesaling, in your opinion?
The best list?
Oh, you don't do direct mail. I forgot.
I do some direct mail. But let me touch on that just a minute, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If I'm wholesaling a rental house, the best direct mail list is the people who own multiple properties in the neighborhood where your house is located.
Okay.
So you look up the address of the house you have and look up all the absentee owners that own more than one property in that area. And
okay.
That is your best buyer's list.
Okay. Okay, but you don't do direct mail for sellers.
We do some direct mail for sellers. Not a whole lot, but we do some. Mm-hmm. But you know what? One of the best new ways, I shouldn't even say new, but one of the best ways we started doing again, we got out of it for the longest time, but one of the ways we started doing again, when we get a house under contract, we just have a bandit sign that says foreclosure with an arrow, and it has our phone number, and we put the address of the property, and we put the price down and our phone number. And you would be amazed at how many calls we get. If we bought it for 50 and we're wholesaling it for 60, we might put a price of 70 on the bandit sign. Because most of the people who are calling off the bandit signs are going to live in it, but they know if it's a $100,000 neighborhood, if there's a sign on it, if there's a sign out there that says $70,000, they know that's a deal. And a lot of them are cash buyers.
Mm.
We've sold a lot of properties like that lately.
Mm-hmm.
Good question, though. Anybody else have a question? Anybody have any question you want to throw out? Wow, well, this has been a good call tonight. We've had a lot of good questions, even though only a couple people. A lot of people like to kind of sit in the background and just listen to what other people are doing. But, you know, you can do that. That's fine. And then some people jump in with questions. So, but I really appreciate you guys being on tonight. I appreciate all the great questions, especially from Mark and Sonia. But I really do appreciate that. If you guys have any questions in between these calls, you can always email me anytime at larry@larrygoins.com. Just always put Inner Circle in the subject line, and I answer those first. So I appreciate you guys very much. I appreciate your business, and I look forward to hearing your success stories. And remember, you know, if you need anything, whatever it is, we really want you to be successful, and we want you to go out there and start doing some deals. So please don't hesitate to hit me or any of my team members up if we can help you guys with anything, okay?
Great. Thanks, Larry.
Awesome. No problem. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks, if not before.
Okay. Right. And for your mom.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.